Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Craig Nathanson. Craig is the vocational coach and works with those in midlife to find their own right work. Craig is the author of multiple books, including his most recent book, How to Find the Right Work During Challenging Times, A New Approach to Your Life and Work After 40. Also, The Best Manager, Getting Better Results with People. Craig is also a speaker, coach in private practice, and college professor in the area of management in human and organizational development. And he's taught internationally in Russia, China, and Vietnam. Craig's online communities are www.thevocationalcoach.com and www.thebestmanager.com. Let us now welcome Craig Nathanson. Craig?
Thank you very much, John. It's great to be back here in the city. Good evening, everyone. I went to Lowell High School here a couple years ago. I won't tell you how many. It's really great to be back. After 40, the most important question I think we could ask ourselves is, what work must emerge through us? You know, up till 40, we pretty much have all kind of done what, you know, society has expected, more or less. But after 40, it's really an important time of our life to start to think about how could we recreate a second half of our life that brings us more joy, more fulfillment, more passion. How does that sound?
Good.
Thank you. It is good, but it has to start from us. And so that's why I focus my work around talking about your work. You know, I think work is the most important thing in our lives. It affects who we are. You know, years ago, if you met somebody at a party and they said, "So, Craig, what do you do?" You'd say, "Well, I'm an engineer. I'm vice president. I'm an assistant teller." You would give a job title, right? When you get older, it's important not to answer with a job title, but to answer with who you are, you know, versus what you do. I'm a father. I'm a runner. I'm a parent. I'm a husband, etc. Because no one can take who you are away from you, but someone can take away your job title. So our work, your work, affects everything in your life. It affects how you feel about other people. It affects how you feel about yourself. It affects how you feel about the world. So I believe that work should be the focus for one's whole life. As I've written in my past books, I don't believe in the concept of retirement, because then you die. Better to find work which will last. It's true. Statistically, it's something like 65% of men, and I think it's 58% of women, die within 10 years after retiring at 60. Now, you might say, well, that's 60. But you know what? We're living longer now, if you haven't expected. So this is the time, really, to start to think about how to recreate a life around your work. I want you tonight to think about what work could each of you do that would last a lifetime, that would last until you stopped breathing. That's the question for tonight. It's never too early and it's never too late. How does work start out for most of us? We get a job that somebody told us about. Maybe we're 19 or 20. And we start to work at this job. And we just took any job because we needed money to finally move out and get our own apartment. And we really didn't think about the whether we'd like the job. In fact, we never really even considered that. The fact was the job would give us some money. So this is how it works for most of us, right? You get your first job in your early 20s, and you start working, and you start making money, which is cool. So you start to buy things, and before long, you're 25, and you're quickly into... you guys know this story. So now you're into debt. So now you get a little frantic, but it's okay. You'll just work harder, more, in order to pay off the debt. But then something happens around 30. you get responsibilities, right? Family, a house, etc. And now it's a little bit harder. You start to feel a little pressure. And you decide that it's not enough just to work harder. Now, in order to pay off these debts, you better do what? You better move up, get a promotion, right? More money. And you know, the audiences that I have the hardest time speaking to are those folks in the 30s. Because, you know, in the 30s, we're running so fast. We never really have time to think about whether we like our work. We just have to pay off that debt. So now we're in our 30s. We're running fast. And we decide we better get a promotion. The problem is with promotions is, you know, you climb this ladder, as a lot of you realize, and then you find out at the end it's leaning against the wrong wall for you. And you decide maybe this isn't a good approach. So that's how that works. And then we hit somewhere between 38 and 45. In my doctoral work, 15 years of reading about what happens to people in terms of the intersection of their life and work, is that somewhere for most of us, between 38 and 45, one of five things happen for most people. A divorce, a layoff, a financial calamity, an illness, or just a feeling like, is this all there is? You know, you ever go to sleep at night and you've been really busy, so busy you didn't have time to eat, go to the bathroom, etc. But you lay in bed and you go, I was busy today, but what did I really accomplish? You know, what contribution did I make to the world? I don't feel good about myself, but what am I going to do? I have these responsibilities. Usually, though, this is the best time to make change in your life, around your work, when you have a crisis. I think, with all due respect, the economic crisis that we're going through, which I actually believe is due to poor management, which is why I've been writing management books lately. The economic crisis that we're in, is actually a good time to think about how to recreate a second half of life that's going to work better for you. It's funny when we're under crisis how it forces us to sort of look at things that are most important. So for most people, it takes a crisis to make change. I wish that wasn't the case. I wish clients that came to me saw me way before the crisis. Never happens. So even if you go to sleep at night, and hopefully you don't have any of these issues happening to you, but if you go to sleep at night and you have this kind of feeling like, is this all there is? Well, it's time to do something about it. Tonight. Now. And if you haven't noticed, we're living a lot longer. I think the average age is somewhere in mid-80s. I read the other day, it's like 86 for women and 84 for men in this country. And, you know, if you look at some of the recent research, you know, we're really wired to live to 100 if we take care of ourselves. I read something the other day that said a child born in 2010 could expect to live to 120 if they took care of themselves. So look at your age, whether you're 70 tonight, or 60, or 50, or 40, or 30, or 25, you have a long time left. So let's get started on the right work for you. And notice I said the right work. So let me start out by talking about some definitions. How about wrong work? What's a definition of wrong work? Let me give you the definition of wrong work, because I don't want you to do this work much longer. Wrong work is when you get up in the morning and you don't want to go to work. You say, why do I have to get up? You don't look forward to it. You feel like the job, and it's certainly a job, isn't a good alignment of your abilities and interest. You might even be good at it, but you're no longer interested. You look at the people around you and say, God, I don't like them. And they probably don't like you either. That's how it works. You look at the clock and you go, is it time for lunch yet? I wish the boss's meeting started earlier. When I was a senior manager for 25 years in corporate America, I used to have my big meetings at the end of the day at 4 o'clock, and they would be stand-up meetings because everybody would pay attention because they wanted to go home. These meetings that started in the morning, you know, at 9 o'clock by the time we finished, and they talked about the meeting, and it was lunchtime, which actually worked out if you didn't like your job because, you know, it kind of wasted half the day. But wrong work is when you just don't feel good about yourself anymore. You don't see the future. You wonder where this career ladder is taking you. But you don't know how to get out. Wrong work could be paralyzing. It could stay with you entire life. I had a client a couple years ago. He went through a divorce and a bunch of really bad stuff. He was ill, cancer, and he had to start his life over. And he took the first job he could find as a car salesman at 42. And he hated it. And he said, you know, Craig, this job, I need the money, but it's making me feel so bad about myself, I just don't want to go on anymore. So taking the wrong work can actually have very, very bad effects on you. I had another client who was a PhD in art. However, at age 70, she had spent 35 years as an assistant in a big company. And she hated it. And it wasn't until she was fired, or as I like to say, let out of job prison. It's not good if you're laughing. That she was able to finally see a new path for herself. Today, she's the art coach. And at 76, she helps aspiring artists place their art in museums around the world. Sometimes wrong work can last a long time. You know, I was a senior manager executive in high tech, et cetera, for 25 years, and I was really good at it. I mean, I was really good at it. I never really liked it, though. And so you have to be careful, because just going from one job to the next job, just because you're good at it, before long, it becomes 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. So wrong work is not healthy. So don't do wrong work anymore. Instead, let's talk about right work. What is right work? You know, you get up in the morning and you're happy, the H word. You're happy. I mean, people never talk about joy at work. They'd rather talk about, well, other things. But, you know, being happy is important. You wake up in the morning and you're happy. You feel like this work, and you don't call it a job any longer. It's your work. It's your life's work. It just feels right to you. Like when you buy a new shirt and it just looks good, and you go, wow, that's kind of cool. I should buy more new shirts. That's what this role feels like. You feel like your abilities, what you're really good at and really are motivated to do, and your deep interest connect. All of a sudden, the world looks great. You know, you like the people you work with, and they seem to like you. You never think about vacation anymore. And by the way, that's why vocation and vacation sound so alike. You know, Monday's the best day of the week, and Friday's the worst, because you have to wait till Monday to continue. Right work just feels fulfilling. You know, after 40, there's three things that come into play when you work. The first is objectives, right? We have a job and we're expected to do stuff. So that's the same for everybody. But that's not the thing that I'm concerned about. After 40, it's important for you to ask yourself, listen carefully, is this work coherent to me? Coherent means, does it make sense why I am doing this work? Not because someone's paying me, not because I've been asked to do it, but does it make sense? Like, it makes sense why I'm speaking to you tonight. If it didn't make sense, this would be a job and would be difficult. So is your work coherent, and is it significant? Do you feel like this work makes a difference to you and maybe somebody else? And I would argue that after 40, we all start thinking about, how could my work make a difference to somebody else? So these are the things to think about. So right work. Right work. I had a client who was laid off from a big company. He also went into a deep depression. He didn't know what to do. And I said, you have to look under your nose sometimes for right work. It turned out that I asked him what he was good at, and the only thing he kept repeating over and over and over was raising an autistic son with his wife. And he told me the challenges of raising this child who is now 19. To make a long story short, today he and his wife have a business where they help other families with autistic kids. And I mean, I get tingles saying this, because that's, you know, it comes together for him. I have another client recently. He quit a job at a bank because he told a lot of jokes and they didn't appreciate that at the bank. He moved to Florida, and today he's in film school, because at age 48, he's going to make movies. Right work takes some work. In fact, it's the hardest job search you'll ever find. But it's worth it. So, are we ready? How do you find work? How do you then find right work? I have lots of ideas. I could go on for hours, but I'm going to give you a few ideas. First, imagine you took a piece of paper. And on the left, you wrote abilities. And on the right, you wrote deep interest. I want you to think about tonight. What are you able to do if, listen carefully, if you were motivated to do them? What are the things that you're best at that you're also motivated to do? It's very different from just listing, well, I'm good at this, I'm good at this, I'm good at this, but I no longer care about this. Like in my office, I had this thing dangling from the ceiling like a fire alarm thing, and I know how to fix it. I should go get a ladder, I should bring the ladder in, I should climb up, it takes an hour. I'm not really good with my hands, but I know how to fix it. I have the ability to fix it. I don't want to fix it, so I'm going to hire somebody to fix it, you see. So tonight I want you to think about, what are your top 3 to 5 abilities? Things that you're really good at, but you're also motivated to do right now. Make sense? Yes? My college students, I say, this means yes, and this means no. Okay, thank you. On the right side, deep interest. If I sent all of you to Barnes & Noble for an hour, where would you go? What part of the bookstore would you go to? You know, we go to different parts of the bookstore during different parts of our life. So what are your deep interests? I mean, things that you do that you're interested in that just make time go fast. You know, you just want to pinch yourself. You go, wow, if I could just do this all the time. So you make this list, right? And your interest and your abilities. And then you circle the ones that match. You circle the pairs that match. That's your right work tonight, ladies and gentlemen. The intersection for you of your abilities and interests. You see, after 40, it's better to be interested in something and have no idea how to do it. Because you're interested, you'll figure out a way. You'll be motivated to learn it, right? Than to be really good at something and no longer interested. You know, I'm almost 54. I want to learn how to play the piano. I don't know how, but I'm motivated to learn. Better than if I played a piano all my life and I could care less now about playing the piano. So abilities and interest, very important. Now let's go back to right work or wrong work for a second. Don't take work that is not challenging to you and you feel like you have a lot of skills. Don't take work that's not challenging. You know, I'm a college professor and I've taught in many places. I teach online and I've been at some universities online. They're just terrible. I won't mention the names. This one college I'm thinking of, it starts with a U and ends with a P. But, and you know, with all due respect, this wasn't interesting to me. It wasn't challenging. I felt like I was a good teacher. So make sure you don't take work that, you know, you feel like you have a lot of skills, but it's not challenging. Because you'll get burnout, is my point. Right? You'll get burnout. Actually, you'll get bored and have plenty of apathy. The opposite is true. Make sure that you don't take work that you don't have a lot of skills in. The work is challenging and you don't have the skills. And you don't see a path to acquire those skills. Sometimes we take work that other people say, wow, Craig, this would be a really good job for you. It's challenging. And you think, wow, there's no way I can't do this. Like if I was invited by John tonight to speak about economics, I would be like, wow, how many jokes could I tell before the audience realized I don't know anything about economics? Now, if I gave this talk in economics 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, I bet I would give an okay talk. But every single talk, I would be so stressful, right? Because I'm talking about something I don't care about. So you have to make sure in your own work, starting right now, you move out of work that is challenging, but you know you don't have the path to learn the skills. Now, this third category I always like to talk about. It's really important. You have to think about this. You don't want to do work that's not challenging, and you don't know how to do it anyway. Think about that. You know, my sink at home in the kitchen had a leak last month, and I asked my neighbor, who's a plumber, to come over and fix it. He comes in, brings his tools. He's underneath the sink. This is his passion. He's telling me everything about the history of plumbing, and the glue and the pipes. I could barely stay awake. But see, this was his it was his passion than my passion. However, I was not interested at all in plumbing. And by the way, if I had to fix it, I would take down the whole neighborhood. Right? So you don't want work that's not challenging and you don't know how to do it. So tonight I want you to think about what work could you do starting right now that's challenging, but you also know how to do it. There's a path, right? Like I'm a public speaker. You know, every time I speak, it's a challenge because it's a different audience. It's a different setting. I talk about lots of different things. But, you know, I've been doing it a lot, and I enjoy it, so it seems to work for me. Same for you. What work can you do that is a nice alignment, right? So you want to match high challenges and high skills. In this economy, it's important for everybody, especially over 40, to have three streams of income. I want you to think about that. Think about what product or service could you sell for $1? Because if you could sell something for a dollar, you could sell it for more dollars. What product or service could you sell to generate income? Even if you plan on working for one person, it's still important in this economy, which I think everyone would see, to have multiple streams of income. And I'm going to talk a few minutes about how to do that, because I think it's important. You know, you're all a product, and your work becomes, you know, a subset of you as a product. You know, so let's talk about you incorporated here for a second. Imagine you had a piece of paper with four columns. In the first column, it's product or service. I want you to think tonight about if you had to sell tomorrow a product, which is something you create, something that's tangible, or a service, something you provide, for $1, so you don't get hung up on money at this point, you know, what would that be? What would you list? It's a good exercise. You know, even if you're a sales executive or a project manager or an engineer and you're working for someone else, it's still important to think like this, like a free agent, like an entrepreneur, right? People will appreciate you, and you'll also interview better as well. So what product or services could you offer? So that goes in the first column, right? And it's amazing. In an audience the other day, a woman said to me, well, I can't think of anything. And I said, not anything? She goes, well, I bake cakes, but how are you going to make $80,000 baking cakes? You know, like it's my problem, of course. But I said to her, you know, if you're good at baking cakes, what are other some derivatives of baking cakes? And by the end of a 10-minute conversation, she had lots of ideas. In other words, you start with something that you really, which is really a good alignment of your abilities and your interests that we talked about. And then you start to think about, what products or services can I sell? The second column is features. So what are the features of a product or service that you could sell to somebody else? Again, even if you're looking for a traditional job from your current traditional job, or say you're a free agent right now. By the way, I like that term better than free agent. And you're looking for the next role for you. I like the word role versus job. I never use the word job. It's too constrained. You know, job equals career, which is just an exchange of service for money. We're just renting ourselves to somebody. And that equals retirement. That equals death. So the idea tonight is vocation. Okay, vocation. All right, so second column, features. What are the features of your products and services that you could sell? Third column, benefits. What are the benefits of your product or your service? And the last column is most important, which is, what niche audience do you most want to sell something to? So even, again, if you're applying for a traditional job, who do you want to serve? Who do you want your customer base to be? Children? Elderly? It's important to think about this, because if you think about the concept of work that's going to last your whole life, who do you want to work with your whole life as your customer base? So this very simple little matrix I found very useful, and just as a starting point, to sort of stand back and say, okay, if I was going to sell myself, what would I sell for $1? So let's move on. As you're working down the path to write work, it's really important to become an expert at what you're passionate about. Better after 40 to be an expert at one thing than average at many things. So tonight I want you to think about where are your passions, right? Where are your passions? Where do you want to become an expert? The good news is there's lots of traditional ways to become an expert. You can get a degree, you can get a certificate. The good news is about 60% of colleges today in this country offer online degrees. But putting all the sort of usual logical stuff aside, one of the best ways to have confidence in yourself is to give yourself proof that you, in fact, are an expert in this area that you're passionate about. I'll show you how to do that. Everybody, take a moment and just think about what is one idea that you have that you're really passionate about. That, you know, if you can just do this as your work and make whatever you need to make for the rest of your life, what would that be? I want you to think about that. And as you think about that, here's what I'd like you to do. I want you to write a 600-word article, an advice article for somebody else. A 600-word article is probably a page and a half. Let's say one of you is passionate about sales. You just love to sell. You sell anything. Okay, then write an article. The top 10 ways to close any sale. So you write, there's this one, there's this one, there's this one. So you put your ideas down. And then, this is where the internet comes in handy, you publish it on the internet. Now today there's hundreds, if not thousands of sites where you take an article and you're responsible for the content. I like ezinearticles.com, by the way. That's my favorite. I have 100 of my articles there. But anyway, you take this article that you've written and you publish it at one of the many free internet sites. Within 24 hours, your article gets categorized, name, title. And if you go into Google within 48 hours and type in your name, you see, wow, you're an author. You see your article, the top 10 ways to sell. Are you with me? Now, all that does is give you proof that, wow, I really do know something about sales. And then sort of magic happens after that. A week later, you go back into Google, you type in your name, and you go, wow, my article's at 10 sites, 20 sites, 30 sites, 40 sites. How did my article end up on like, I wrote an article the other day about passion after 40, and it's on a dentist's site, you know. I don't know how it ended up there. It's amazing. So what happens is you write down an article, and you start to get confidence in yourself. And the internet is just one idea to sort of move yourself out there. But, of course, you know, you could see the uses for this. Even if you work in a traditional job for somebody else, the fact you're building a track record around your passions. So start with your passion, write an article, publish it. Magic will happen from that point. So education is important. Next, it's really important to celebrate when you start to make a change in your life. I mean, tonight I want all of you to start to think about, how can I start to take steps to gain more fulfillment, more joy, more love in my work life? And as a result, how can I celebrate? You know, as you start to make steps toward doing work you love, you have to be the one that rewards yourself. You know, internal rewards are far better than external rewards. They last a lifetime. And when you start to do work you love, you have to reward yourself a lot. Whatever it is that you like to do, as long as it doesn't hurt you or other people. Buy an ice cream cone, go to a movie, go for a run, whatever it is. You have to reward yourself. And the reason I bring this up, when people are moving towards work to last a lifetime, no one's going to be cheering them on. You have to become your own cheerleader. Even people that love you are the last people they're going to cheer you on, unless you're really, really fortunate. Because that can be a threat to your family members when you come home and say, hey, guys, guess what? I'm going to do this. You know, that can be a threat. You have to work through this. So you have to learn to celebrate, is my point. And the celebrations are very different than what we're used to in most corporate jobs, as an example, where on Friday we're allowed to wear jeans. Wow, that's great. Thanks. I never understood that, by the way. You know, the way I celebrate is I love the New York Times. And so every day after a couple clients, or I've written an article or I've, you know, given a talk, I go find a quiet space and I read the New York Times. I have a cup of tea and I take a 20-minute nap. And I wake up feeling great. That's my little secret. Well, I guess it's not a secret anymore, but it works for me. You know, when I was in corporate America for 28 years, HR never came up to me and said, Craig, the new benefit we have for employees is a 20-minute nap with tea in the New York Times. No, it was always dress down day on Friday. And then I had to go buy jeans because I didn't even have jeans. It was so stressful to me. And then I would go to work on Fridays. I still remember this dress nice, and people would make fun of me. Like, didn't you know this is dress down day? Oh, yeah, that's right. And then I would, you know, have to buy jeans. The whole thing was just terrible to me. Anyway, when you're following your path towards right work, it's really important to learn to celebrate and reward yourself. And only you know what that is. Okay? I want to go over 8 steps. That if you follow these 8 steps, you will find your right work at the end of the rainbow. However, these 8 steps take a lot of discipline, so you got to be ready. Okay? The first step, which was part of my first book, which was Perfect Vocational Day, which I trademarked in 2001 because I thought this was very important, is to envision what a perfect vocational day would be for the rest of your life. In other words, think now for a moment. And sometimes it's helpful to ask yourself, look, if I had all the money in the world, how would I live the rest of my life as designated by one day? In other words, when would you get up in the morning? What time? You might say, well, 8 o'clock. So you take a piece of paper and you write 8, 10, 12, 2, 4, you know, et cetera. Go through the whole day. And actually, like an artist who's designing drawing a painting, how would you design your perfect day for the rest of your life? When would you get up? Where would you go? Who would you be with? What would you do? Focused around your work. It has to focus around your work. You can't say, well, from 1 to 4, I'll just work. And in the morning, I'll go to Pete's and I'll do... No, it has to be focused around your work. Yeah, men always want to get up in the morning and go to Pete's and read the paper. And women want to work out. That's what I've found. Men eventually work out by the end of the day, I think, is based on my research. So your perfect vocational day, what would it be like, right? And this needs to be a day that you could just live over and over for the rest of your life, that you're so excited, you know, you're just drooling. So that's step one, by the way, of the 8 steps, is to envision. You know this, but I'm going to repeat it. If you could envision what your life would be like if you just live this vision of your perfect vocational day, you could actually start to move towards it. Versus if you can't get in your mind what it would look like, feel like, smell like, touch, you know, sound like, it's hard to move towards this. You need the vision for your own life. No one's going to give you that. So the first step is vision, your vision of your perfect vocational day. So you have a vision. Wow, if I could just live this kind of life. Step two, write it down. You know, when you write an idea on paper, magic happens. First of all, you externalize the idea. It looks more important. Do you ever write your goals in January? My wife and I did. So we write our goals in January. And although we should, we don't really look at it until the following December. But amazingly, we usually hit 60 to 70%. And I've been thinking about this lately. That's amazing how that works. Well, I know why it works intellectually. That's the way the mind works, you know. If you think a thought, you start to move towards it. But better to focus on what you want, by the way, versus, you know, what you don't want. A lot of us focus on what we don't want. Well, that was a terrible job. I don't want a job like that. I don't want a job like that. I don't want a job like that. And then you end up going into the same exact job. Focus on what you want. Step two, write it down. That's why goals are so important. Now, one idea about writing things down, I like this idea of writing your own biography. Resumes are passé. I mean, they're important, but they're not, they're necessary, but they're not sufficient. Write your biography. So say your name is Mary Smith. If you're over 40, your biography should be about 2 to 3 years in the future. So first you think about, what do I want my life to be like, this perfect vocational day, 2 to 3 years from now? So you start to write, Mary Smith is, and you describe where you're living and what you're doing and who you're with. Maybe you're with new people. Maybe you're, you know, in a different area of the country, whatever. You're not through with this biography until you're just drooling. Wow, if I could really live this life. So you write a future biography. Then you come back and you write today's biography. Well, today, Mary Smith is. And then you see the gap, you see. See, without a gap in your life, there's no problem. Hence, there's no movement. So one of the powerful ideas I have is to write down what you vision so you can start to see it. Step three, talk to everybody you see, strangers, family, more strangers, about what it is that you really want to do. The more you tell people what you want to do in terms of your work, the more you start to move towards it, right? The more you start to believe it. But I don't know, 15 years ago, I was an IT manager in corporate America, but I wanted to become a psychologist. You know, I just started my PhD program. And I was in a plane coming back from a business trip, and this woman got on the plane, and she just started talking to me, and I put my laptop aside, and she told me her whole life's history and all of her problems. And because I was an aspiring psychologist, you know, I helped her for like a five-hour therapy session. And at the end, she was so happy. I mean, I guess I gave her some good ideas. And she said, by the way, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a psychologist. Thank you, Dr. Nathanson. And, you know, I was just an IT manager at the time, but I was good at this. I was good at this. And I thought to myself later, well, I could do this. Talk to everybody you can about what it is that you want to do. Right? That's step three. So envision, write it down, talk about it. Step four, you're not going to like this. You're going to want your money back from the Commonwealth Club after step four. You have to make big change in your life. You know this. If you want to recreate a second half of life around your work that's full of passion and fulfillment and joy, you have to be able and willing to make big change. And that big change is different for each person. It might be a lifestyle change. It might be a location change. You might have to move to a less expensive area. You might have to get a new relationship and get rid of the old one. Or you might have to start a new one. You might have to change the way you handle your money. By the way, when you do what you love, you respect every dollar you earn, by the way. When you don't do what you love, the money just comes in and it goes out. I don't know if you ever noticed that. That's why this concept, this idea I have about what could you sell for $1? Because you sell something for a dollar and you get so excited, right? You appreciate it and you want to start to make your money that way. So envision. Write it down. Talk to others. Make big change. What big change are you going to have to make in your life to sort of move these barriers aside? The next step is to really get support. The problem is most of us end up in wrong work because the more people we hang around, they're also doing work that isn't what we want to do. If you're a teacher, you got to hang around teachers. You can't hang around engineers. If you're a therapist, you don't want to hang around construction workers. You hang around people that you really want to, you know, that you want to be doing that work. So here's some ideas for building a support system for yourself around your work. It's really three tiers. The first tier, get about six people in your life who are just interested in what you're interested in. Ever notice when you're around people who share the same interests as you, you kind of feel better about yourself? You don't feel like something's broken. You're like, wow, you like that? I like that too. Now, these people really don't help you much other than to make you feel whole. So think about what you're really passionate about tonight, where you want to start to reorientate your work towards, and think about how you could find half a dozen people to connect with on a weekly, biweekly basis that are just interested in your circle. Then next, find about three people who are interested but supportive. In other words, they give you ideas. Think about where can you find two or three people that will not only be interested, but they'll give you ideas. Tonight would be a good example of tier two. You're all here, I assume, because you're interested in this topic of right work for yourself, not economics. And I bet among each other, there's lots of ideas to share. And maybe you'll walk away from me with some ideas tonight. So this is a good example of tier two. And tier three is find a coach, find a mentor, living or dead. You know, my mentor for years was Benjamin Franklin. And he never knew me, and I never got to talk to him, but I read all his books. And I love it. He used to go to bed at night with an index card. It was kind of like an index card. And he would pull it out, and he would read his virtues just before he went to sleep. Was I creative? Yeah. Was I frugal? Yeah. Was I friendly? Yeah. Did I exercise? Okay, tomorrow. But I thought, what a way to live your life is to, as a person of integrity, is to figure out your values and sort of look at them every single day. So find a coach. Find a mentor. Find somebody who really could cheer you on. And that's hard. The last time most of us had coaches was when, if we were lucky, we were in sports as kids. Usually we say, well, I have my spouse as my coach. Wrong. In some cases. Unless you're fortunate. Then they're in good shape. So support, right? That's the next step. After that, take small steps. It's important that you don't let a day go by without starting to take some steps toward right work. I have a client who was frustrated and upset that these young kids were coming back from Iraq and they had not seen their families for one year, 2 years, and he wanted to do something. So he started a program called Warrior Vacations. And what he does is he helps condominium owners, resort owners, give away free rooms for vacations to the families of the military folks coming back. And that was his passion. It started out as just something he wanted to do, and now it's a full-time occupation. He was a lawyer before. My point is, he started that by just making one phone call. I said, just make one phone call. Call somebody who owns a resort and see if they would give up a room for a summer for 2 weeks to somebody from Iraq coming. So he did it, and it worked. And then one step led to another. So if you take small steps, don't let a night go by without doing one thing just before you go to sleep that relates to what's really important to you. Because, you know, life goes quick. Life goes really, really, really quick. I had a client many years ago. He was in his 70s, and he wanted to make a transition. And I said, I want you to go out and buy a glass bottle of marbles, and let's put the amount of marbles in the jar should represent the amount of days you have left in your life. And we looked at the actuary tables, and you know he was supposed to live to 86, so he had like 16 years times, I don't know, 20,000-30,000 marbles. And a couple years later, he called me up and said, I finally understand what this was about. I woke up in the morning and I noticed that the marbles were finally going down, and I realized how fast life goes. And he made his transition. So it's important to make progress every day, to do something. You know, don't wait. Must versus should. That's the two words to remember. The seventh step, is to measure your progress. No one's going to measure after tonight's session whether you're moving towards right work for you, right? You have to measure that. I would say all of you are going to get up tomorrow and you're either going to go back to this job or you're going to go back to looking for one. And no one's going to measure anywhere up there next to you whether you're focusing on the right work or not. That has to come from you. So coming up with a system just to measure your progress. You've heard the adage, if you measure it, it gets done. And last, the eighth step is really to celebrate. I mean, just celebrate that you came tonight to get some ideas. The Commonwealth Club does great marketing for these events. And I bet there's at least five times as many people that said, you know, wow, how to find right work. What a great topic. I'm going to come to this. And they're not here. But you decided and you came. So there's a difference between deciding and taking action, you see. So celebrate. Celebrate that you came tonight. Celebrate you came to get some ideas. And you left this room committed to recreate a second half of life for you that's going to give you more passion, more fulfillment around the work that's right for you. If you forget everything I've said tonight, it's important for you to define what this concept of right work means. That's why I wrote a book about it. I think it's so important. Before I wrap up, I want to just take a few minutes and see if I can work with some of you. If you have any questions or thoughts or comments, if just one person talks about their situation, it helps everybody else in the room. So if you have a question, comment, or you'd like me to help you, please grab a mic and, you know, ask away.
Craig, thank you very much. We'd like to remind our listening audience, this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Craig Nathanson, Finding Right Work in Difficult Times. All right. There are questions, I'm
good.
Sure.
Excellent.
And we'll pass the mic.
Good. It usually takes one person, and it.
There was another half of the title to this whole talk, which was the age factor.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. Obviously it gets more and more difficult the older you get, even if you follow this pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it can be. We get stubborn.
If you're applying for jobs, right, mm-hmm. that you want or that are you and all, and it's so easy, even though your age is not supposed to be relevant or not on there, it usually is mm-hmm. in some way or another. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome that?
First, decide what you want to do. And then figure out why you want to do that. And then be able to tell somebody else why this is something that you're really good at and you're passionate about. I mean, the only reason there's a job is because someone has a problem and they need someone to fix it. And to me, you know, as a hiring manager for 25 years, I always hired the person, regardless of age, who had the energy, who had the passion. You know, usually if you move towards things that you really want to do, you're going to have a level of energy that, is so immense that it's not really going to matter how old you are. I understand the barriers. I mean, nowadays companies want to hire people that have the least amount of experience and pay them the least. And so that's a challenge. But my advice to you is don't focus on that because it's not useful.
But you have to get to the interview. And
I mean, there's a lot of practical things I would suggest, like only put the last 10 years on your resume. I mean, you've heard all the, you know, all the usual tricks. No, it's a challenge. I don't know if I have an answer other than if you get in front of somebody and you're very clear first about what it is that you want to do, what you're really excited about. I think that's a good seller. A lot of us, as we get older, we just, and I understand financially, I'll take anything. But that also shows when we start to interview. So it's a challenge. But I would first, you know, think about what it is that you want and really start to narrow your focus. The more narrow we are with our focus, I've found can be helpful. That's a good question, though. Next question. Hi.
Speaking of narrowing your focus, uh-huh. I have so many ideas and interests. And how do you do that? Mm-hmm. I used to be an IT manager, and that passion's been gone.
Do you want to be a psychologist?
No.
Okay.
I want to make films. I want to do a documentary.
And?
And I actually contacted somebody, mm-hmm. and he said, oh, we need a writer. You have to have contacts. And I said, oh, my God, it's going to take a lot of money. That's my first passion. I mean, I'm really interested in doing that.
Yeah.
I don't have the money to do it.
A lot of times our negativity sort of stops us. I mean, a couple thoughts. One is I would contact film schools and talk to the deans and talk to students and find out what they do there. Find out how they use what they learn in school and what they want to do next. You know, again, network around people that want to do, that, you know, that are doing exactly what you want to do. I mean, that's what I would suggest. Also, a lot of us have many passions. I hear this all the time. I have so many things I'm interested in. I don't know what to do with them. First, draw them all on a piece of paper. Draw like the Olympic rings. You know, draw circles and sort of stare at all of your passions and start to see where you can make connections. Like, I have a client this morning I talked to in Hawaii, and her passions are really kind of different. She wants to work with dogs, animals, and she wants to help people overcome shyness. And first we were both stuck, and then you know, the idea came to me. You help people overcome shyness through the use of dogs. I don't know how we're going to do that yet, but that's the point, is to start to look at your patterns and see where they connect. But if you love film, go talk to people who are actually doing this, who figured out a way to do this, as opposed to saying, I'm too old, or it's going to cost too much money. Or, I mean, all of those things are there, but there's always ways around those things.
I just came from a career counseling.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of assessments.
Yeah.
As it turned out, I'm a thinker, uh-huh. not really an artist.
I wouldn't get hung up on assessments. I think assessments are good to the extent you could look at the patterns. But the biggest assessment is what work must emerge through you now. Think about your abilities and interests and how you could align those. I think that's the best self-assessment. Yes, hi. Yes.
I was a former IT manager, too.
I guess.
Here in San Francisco for a venture capital firm. Uh-huh. And venture capital hasn't done so well over the last few years. So uh-huh. most of those jobs have been outsourced, eliminated. It's gone. Mm-hmm. I have all kinds of passions in terms of new vocations and mm-hmm. a career. But the other thing is, you know, what if you're running out of savings and mm-hmm. you have to take a mm-hmm. survival job,
yes.
How does that fit into
the strategy?
The strategy for, you know, mm-hmm. I'd be so much better with consulting with people, you know, their homes and their offices about how to, you know, kind of electronic feng shui, you know, mm-hmm. where they should, you mm-hmm. know, where's the wireless router and where's mm-hmm. this, whatever, you know, type stuff.
So take the next survival job, at least in the industry that you're interested in. You know, if you're a high-tech engineer and you love animals and you're living month to month, okay, take another engineering job, but in the animal industry. So, right? So at least you're around the content that you're interested in. Does that make sense? In other words, at least even if you have to take something to survive, take it in an area that's closer to what, you know, to where your passions are, as opposed to just the next thing. That's my advice. You know, money's such a sensitive issue for all of us, and first you have to look at, you know, how long could I go before, you know, I have to make any money? And once I start making money, which is probably right away for most of us, you know, how much do I need to make? How much, you know, what's the difference between need and want in terms of what I need to make versus what I want to do? Those are all individual trade-offs. They're difficult, but necessary to sort of think about. Let's see, you were first, and then you. Yes. Hi. Thank you. Yeah, use the mic.
Would you say more about, like, if what you're good at, or, you know, what your strengths are, mm-hmm. aren't what you're interested in?
I wouldn't focus there. I mean, I see no reason to work on what you're good at if you're not interested. As a college professor, my students sit there and I say, why are you in my class? To get an A. Why? To get a degree. Why? To get a good job. Okay, so what do you want to do? I don't know. And it turns out that, you know, they're in classes that they have no interest in. So especially over 40, I think it's a really serious question to sort of think about. Because there's a lot of things we could do that we're good at. But we know deep inside if we're not interested. And that, you know, that comes out. It comes out in your relationships with other people. It comes out in how you act in the role. I mean, it's just a waste. It's especially after 40, it's a waste of time. Under 40, maybe it's okay. But after 40, it's a waste of time. Hi.
Hi. It's a little daunting. I just retired, and I'm going, oh, my God, I'm going to kick the bucket in 10 years. I better get out of retirement.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm here, too. I think this has been great. But one of the things that maybe I missed something because I blinked, but mm-hmm. you brought up the three streams of income, which also seems to kind of relate to what this woman said.
Yeah.
Why the three, and mm-hmm. what might that look like?
Yeah, well, six is better, but three seems to be a – I usually say six, but three is a good place to start. I mean, it depends. I mean, my own example, you know, I'm a speaker. I'm a college professor. I publish books. You know, I have a private coaching practice. There's four or five things that I put together. You know, it's that – for you and for each of you, it's that kind of model. Is think about what four or five things could you do that are similar – that take all of those patterns of your abilities and your interests and your passions, and they all work together. I wouldn't do three or four streams of income. They're totally separate, even if you're really, really interested in all of them, because it tends to dilute you, I found. So I would start with, what are the three things you like to do? Like at a talk I gave the other day, a woman likes to sew, and she said she likes to paint. And I said, well, those kind of, you know, they're both creative things. And she likes to do accounting. But she found that the accounting was getting her tired to do the creative stuff. I said, well, take the third thing. Get rid of the accounting and find another creative thing that you can do. That, you know, or at least be an accountant in a sewing factory or something. You know, keep it integrated. So start to think about where you could make multiple streams of income around things that you really love, all of those things. Yes, I think we have time for two more.
Hi, I want to get back to, I think it was step four, mm-hmm. when you said you need to make a big change. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious whether that's a symbolic change or a practical change. And the reason I'm asking is, like, personally I felt in a rut. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced the only way to get out of this rut is to move across the country.
Yeah.
And my friends are like, whoa, slow down. I'm not sure you need to make such a big dramatic change. And change in itself is addictive. You can keep changing things up. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to get a little more mm-hmm. insight from you.
Yeah,
about that.
I think if you think it through, change can be very helpful. You know, motion changes emotion. So sometimes a move to another part of the country can give you a whole new perspective. But only if you've thought it through. You need a plan, right? You don't want to change for change's sake. But if you're in a rut in many aspects of your life, moving actually is a very healthy thing to do, especially if we live in an expensive area and you move it into a less expensive area, because all of a sudden your surroundings are different, and that causes you to think differently. You know, thinking from different perspectives is the way to get out of a rut, and sometimes it's hard to do if you stay in the same thinking pattern. So I'm always for that. I'm always for big change. I like moving can be beneficial. It just depends on your situation. Maybe one more. Yes, we have one more. Thank you. And I'll do a little wrap-up.
It seemed like a lot of your clients mm-hmm. became entrepreneurs or started something mm-hmm. new. What about mm-hmm. finding something like in an existing field, mm-hmm. and how would you recommend doing that in a tough job market?
You have to get creative because, as we know, it's difficult. First, figure out what it is that you want and figure out to you personally why it aligns your abilities and your interest. Then the next step, I think, is to hang around and start to talk to people that are doing exactly what you want to do. And through that informal networking, I think in this economy is the best way to get the role that you want. The traditional way is very hard. It's very hard. I mean, there's just too many people applying for too many jobs. That's why I like this entrepreneur idea, not necessarily only to start your own businesses, although I think that's a way to take back America. And I wrote an article about that a few months ago, is if everybody started to sell a product or a service, we'd take back America, and you'd find out over time that you'd be in great shape. And so I am a proponent of that. However, if you want to go to a more traditional route, there really aren't any jobs now. So the only way to get there is to start to do an informal networking approach. So that's what I suggest. But also sell a few things on your own. And you'll see how that sort of opens up new possibilities. That's why I'm pretty radical in this way. Right now, it's very difficult to get jobs. We all know that. So we got to try something else. You know, this is an overplayed statement, and it came from Einstein. And he said, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting, you know, a different result. So why not follow your heart and do what you love? And wear jeans on Friday if you want to. Last question.
What was the site? I got the first part. Where do you put your article on?
EZineArticles.com. EZine, Z-I-N-E. EZine. You could have your article up tomorrow on all three of your ideas. So I want to leave you with just a few quick comments. One, you know, when an artist goes to draw something, paint something, he or she starts with a blank canvas. And that's what I want you to do tonight. Is start to think about how could I recreate a second half of my life which is going to work better for me. And I suggest focusing around right work is a great place to start. It's even easier than focusing on relationships. Say you're having a relationship challenge. That's kind of hard to start there. Focus on right work first. And everything else will start to fall into place. Listen, it's been my honor to be with you here tonight. If you'd like to keep in touch, again, I have a couple online communities with newsletters and blogs and Twitters, which I don't understand yet, and people are following me and all kinds of things. But at thevocationalcoach.com, my online community for 9 years now, for really focused for people over 40. But if you're under 40, there's a permission slip you have to fill, and then you can get in. And then my newest online community, thebestmanager.com. I really think if just managers learned how to manage people better, people would like their jobs a little bit better. So that's my emphasis, and that's it. You could visit me at thebestmanager.com. And my newest book is out next week called The Best Manager, Getting Better Results with People, capital W. Anyway, thank you so much. I am cheering all of you on. Take care. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Craig Nathanson, for your comments here tonight. We also thank our audience listening to the recording, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 105th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.